This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, whether that's Rovers throwing in a drab 0-0 in the Championship or taking Newcastle all the way to a penalty shootout in the fifth round of the FA Cup, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So, the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18+. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, this is Sam Smodix here, and welcome to the 4,000 Holes podcast.
You are listening to the 4,000 Holes podcast, brought to you by the people at brfcs.com and sponsored by the lovely people at The Terrace.
Welcome everyone to this edition of the Roundtable Show on the 4,000 Holes podcast, and it's my distinct pleasure to have with me a guest from the club. We've got the head of consumer, Fraser Reid, with us because we are going to talk about kits, and I think both of us like kits. So Fraser, welcome back to the 4,000 Holes podcast. How are you right now?
Good. Obviously, as I said, we're in an international break right now, so plenty going on despite the fact that we haven't got any matches at Ewood. Other than obviously the women that played the other day and did very well. So keeping busy, but excited to chat today about some kits.
Good stuff. Well, I think it's a subject that is, some would say, disproportionately close to people's hearts. I think we only have to see the furore over the New England kit, don't we, in the last few days to know how animated people can get. And I'm probably as guilty as many, so I'm not without sin in this regard. But let's walk through the chronology, if we may. I mean, you can explain to us, you know, the process from start to finish, and perhaps explain some of the constraints within which the club works that perhaps wouldn't be readily apparent to us as fans. Let's go back then to right at the very start then, the selection of the manufacturer. So what we've seen, Rovers have moved from Umbro to Nike to Macron over the years. How does that process evolve? To what extent does the club get courted? And to what extent do you have to go out and search for a manufacturer?
So it's a really interesting one, actually. And obviously, it depends at what level you're at any sort of moment in time. Obviously, we're with Macron at the moment and under contract with them. And obviously, that has been a fairly long-term contract over the past few years. And there's still two seasons to go, so 24-25 and 25-26. We will get to a point with Macron where, as our current partner, we're sort of obliged to have a renewal discussion with them. Obviously, we'd like to do that anyway, because I think they've been a great partner of ours. So that's obviously always on the table with the current partner, as long as obviously they still want to keep us, which I think I can gather from conversation they do. But outside of that, obviously, because we're in contract, there's quite clear rules within that contract about what we're allowed to do. So it's largely manufacturers trying to get an idea of when the club, when our contract is up, and if they could be, you know, within a sort of tender process or anything like that at that point. And it really varies. I mean, should I say the real global brands, you know, your sort of your high level that have a big market share, your Nike, your Adidas, obviously Puma, Macron sort of sitting around there. They obviously have different models depending on what level you're at, and you kind of have to take the rough with the smooth in terms of some of the numbers aren't as great, but obviously, you know, potentially it's a more, you know, a bigger market share in terms of product in the store. And then, you know, there will be some outsiders who you maybe hadn't considered that will try and throw some different options at you and sort of tempt you in other ways. So we obviously don't do too much of the outreach because we can't, we're not allowed to, but we get plenty of inquiries in that obviously then just sort of sit there until we've been through conversations with Macron and given them the first chance.
You want to keep them on the toes, I guess, don't you? Because I suppose what you tend to see, I suppose, is manufacturers getting a bit blasé, or by any supplier for that matter. You know, you want to keep them honest, make sure that the pencil is sharp and that the offer that they get is the best on the table. So what was it about Macron that attracted Rovers to partnering with them?
Obviously, I've been at the club 2 seasons now, so it predates me. But in my time and you know, looking at previous relationships the club has had with other suppliers, I think it's their flexibility and their willingness to work with the club. There's a lot of manufacturers out there who, you know, I won't name names, but give sort of template kits, and depending on what level you're at, you get a very different sort of level of account management. And I think, you know, you take the rough with the smooth, and everyone has their different agenda and want out of a partner. I think for us, having the ability to be really involved in the design process, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and having a great relationship with them so that we produce kits that hopefully you guys as fans like and buy into, obviously, from a consumer perspective. That's really important. So really enjoy working with Macron.
Good stuff. Well, they've certainly enhanced their reputation, I think, in recent years. If you look down their roster of clients now, it's phenomenal how quickly they've grown almost from a standing start. You know, I think they started off exclusively lower division, and they're gradually working their way up the food chain. And many of the sides that they sponsor have got promoted, I suppose, is a double whammy in that respect. But the two sites that I check that they supply, one is Sampdoria, and we might come back to them when we talk about favourite shirts in a bit, but that they did a lot of a wide range of stuff for them. But also the Italian rugby team, they did an amazing amount of kit and merchandise for the Italian rugby team. I'm almost tempted, if Rovers Blue gets close to it at some point, I'll order some stuff for the Italian rugby team. Yeah. But let's talk about the contract with Macron then. One of the great myths in football is, well, they'll sign Cristiano Ronaldo and this transfer fee will be paid on the back of shirt sales. So I'm not expecting you to give away all the commercial goodies, but yeah, to what extent do Rovers make significant money from the kit deal, and are you at liberty to be able to share how that process actually works?
Yeah, so I can give you an overview of the contract and the construction of our relationship. It starts with, as every supplier relationship does, a gift of kit. So each year we are given a budget, which we spend in a contra sense with Macron. We obviously have sort of a big order forms, like 15,000 variations of items that we can purchase. You know, obviously the large bulk of that is you know, first team playing kit and training, but obviously it includes women's academy, the community trust, club staff as well. So there's sort of a plethora of options at that point, which we then sort of divvy up between the departments. And obviously they will come in and give us a number that's way above the budget we've...
I was going to say, is there a bidding process then? Like 147 tracksuits, please?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
When we get a big order form and a number that we can go up to in terms of the value, we then split it out as, you know, we tend to go off, okay, what did we do last season? And then make adjustments for any major change. Obviously, you know, one example of that would be the women's side having a sort of different academy set up this year.
Yeah.
And a much sort of more extensive age group plan, which means they needed more. Sort of, we work along those lines, really. But everyone comes in way above what they are given as a target. And then we have to, there's some really good... guys in my team that sort of whittle it down and work out who can get what, and you know, how we can divvy that up. So obviously certain departments and things, you know, we look at budgets and we can always top up and buy extra, but yeah, we try and keep that gift of kit where it is, because otherwise, yeah, we have millions and millions of pieces hanging around at the end of the season.
So this is your chance to plea now for all the kids that bring you the piece of cardboard saying, please, can I have your shirt? In reality, what you're doing, you are stealing that shirt from the club, effectively.
Yeah, it's a real pain point of mine. As a football fan, like, I completely appreciate, you know, the opportunity to get your hands on some match-worn, you know, or some signed merchandise is incredible. And as a kid, the sort of attachment that it gives you then to that player and, you know, and your loyalty to them going forward is huge. It's something where I've got stuff from when I was a kid, you know, so I completely get it. But at the same time, you know, I'm saying to the players, if you can avoid it till further towards the end of the season, that'd be great, because, you know, we've got players that give away shirts like you know, we've got an endless supply and we have to, you know, and we're a big football club. We're the same as many football clubs, so we have stock, but only to a certain extent. And you know, we can't magic the shirts off at the end of the season. So I'll say to a player, look, if you want to give away 30 shirts a season, then you're either going to have to buy them all out of our retail stock, or you're going to have to wear a 4XL for the last five games because you've given away all your mediums that you wear every week.
That would be terrific to see Sammy Smodics running around in a 4XL. Or something.
It's a bit
like
old
that,
school, isn't it? You know, something like that.
There was a time when that was the height of fashion, of course, exactly. but things move on. Let's get to the crux of this then, because this is what I think animates, well, it certainly animates me most. I know many of my fellow Rovers fans. The design process then. So talk us through the timelines, first of all, because I think that's interesting from a fan's perspective as to just how far in advance. And let's walk us through the typical process then about who has the original idea, manufacturer or club, and how does that unfold?
So it all starts, and so we're looking at the 25-26 season currently. So we're right at the beginning of that process. So you're sort of an 18-month timeline from start to finish when we look at initial designs and we move through to obviously going on sale, which tends to be sometime in July. The first phase is Macron basically build a fancy version of a big spreadsheet with various options and looks and textures that they're going with next year for various fabrics and patterns. They'll give us those. So that might be different collars, that might be different materials that they want to use for things, some new technology that they're bringing out within their shirts. So we have almost like a Argos catalogue style sort of ring.
Like a Swatch catalogue, is it?
Yeah, so we go, yeah, we'll have one of those, one of those. So we start off with that and just sort of pinpoint what we like, what we don't. We then also, dependent on the club, but here, as you can tell by this conversation, I'm very enthusiastic about kits. So I then will basically go out into the world of football kits, past and present, and take all of the best bits that I like based on, you know, obviously we're doing the blue and white halves, and then, you know, we've got certain colours that are synonymous with Blackburn Rovers. That all goes into the same sort of, like I said, sort of spreadsheet type thing and goes back off the Macron. So yeah. We have, you know, we can put as much or as little as we want on that. I can just do the circling exercise, or I can give loads and loads of detail in terms of what I want. I've even gone to the extent last year of like drawing it out, you know, using sort of Photoshop and the like to, you know, show how specific we're thinking. Now that never ended up being the final design, but that's my vision in our heads from an internal perspective. So that will go off, usually submitted sometime before May, you know, end of April, sort of your cutoff for that. They will then put together 5 or 6 options per kit, and obviously some training options as well, which then come back to us for review based on obviously the sort of feedback form we've sent to them. We will review those, tweak them, say we do like that, we don't like that. Can we have the collar from that one with the pattern from that one?
Yeah.
Which goes back. They'll send another set of options. And again, we do the same thing. So we're whittling it down each time. Once we've got an idea in our head of, okay, we're going to go with these, we then go across to Bologna. So myself and a couple of members of my team go across to Bologna and we do the final stage in person. So we sit in a room around a big boardroom table, and much to probably the annoyance of their designers, I stand in front of the screen and say, move that there, change that color, make it lighter, darker, so that we get to the point where we're kind of happy, or I think we're happy. So that gives us our final designs. We also, you know, can sort of get a touch and feel on the fabrics, understand what the garments might look like for next year in terms of the fits and that kind of thing. So we spend about 2 days doing that. It's a real sort of in and out process.
Okay, so it sounds like a terrible job, that Fraser, having to go out to Bologna and sit around.
It is the best part of so, it's not all that fun.
Do you know, you could raise money for the club by selling off seats around that table to watch this. I think it would be fascinating. You shouldn't just think about videoing it. I think it would be terrific to see afterwards. So essentially then, it starts off with the light bulb moment. then there's an iterative process that might involve various JPEGs and PDFs being pinged. But the best bit is when you actually get to go and point at things and look and say what's what. So the manufacturer, Macron in this instance, sets certain parameters and certain constraints, and you select from those. But there's multiple variants, which I think is... I think that feels like it's much more flexible than, say, the Adidas, Nike, this is our template this year.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you like it, because that's what you're getting.
Macron are very, very flexible, and to the point where, as a club, we have requested specific things that aren't necessarily an option.
Yeah.
That's away from design, you know, that's actual... you know, the way the fabric is, the way the collar might be, different things we want to do with different parts of the shirt. And they will work with their R&D teams to try and come up with a solution to that request just for us. They will obviously see the level of feasibility to roll it out to other clubs within their roster. But it starts with a request from us, from, you know, a brainchild of an idea here.
Fantastic. That does sound like my dream job, that I have to say. So how much would I have to pay you to be able to do that job as opposed to being paid? Never mind.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I feel I have to ask you this question because it's one that's at the forefront of many supporters' minds. Okay, that's the design process. So let's talk about the supply and the fulfillment, because from a customer experience, what we see is it feels like kits come in a bit random. I know we've had Brexit, and I know we've had Suez Canal container ships being stuck. So yeah, you might want to talk about those, but. It feels like we have to take a punt a long time in advance, and then when the kits are run out, there's nothing in at Christmas to buy kids and stuff like that. Talk us through that process then, and again, the sorts of constraints that you have to accommodate.
So we start the process 18 months in advance, and we are working that whole time to get the design sorted. Once we lock in the design and the orders are placed, which, you know, happens very, very early, manufacturing then starts. All of this is sort of timelined out by Macron on a critical path.
Yeah.
So we have timelines to hit, deadlines to hit. If we don't hit them, that's fine, but everything becomes late.
You move further back down the pecking order, kind of.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. So, you know, and I appreciate that anyone listening to this will say that, you know, it's been late for the past few years and you know, there's stock issues and things like that, which we're working on. I'm going to go out there on a limb and say that this year we've kept a critical path, and I have that from Macron. So it's their timeline that we're sticking to.
Right.
So I am hoping that deliveries will all be here for what we've ordered so far before June, which will give us then time to get that in, to shoot the campaigns, and to get it on sale before the season starts. The other thing it does is allow us to take in the data from early sales and look at the window for repurchasing stock at a new level. So, you know, it's fairly widely available that at the moment we're on 15,000 shirt items. We could obviously, I think we could squeeze that up a little bit to sort of suit demand. Obviously, we have to balance that with having leftover stock at the end of the season. But if we were to... And this is why we encourage people to buy early. It's not just, you know, a marketing ploy. If people buy early and we realise there's a demand, you know, the turnaround
time... Yeah, there's a bigger window to place a second order.
The turnaround time to go back to the factory, I mean, dependent on their schedules, can be anywhere from 3 to 6 months. I generally say that 4 months is probably your window. So if I know in July that they're flying off the shelves when we launch, then getting stuff in for Christmas is doable. But when stuff is sitting until maybe after Black Friday and we're into December and we've only got a few pieces left, if I was to put the order in, then we're going to get it at March, April.
Yeah.
You know, then you're beholden to form, you're beholden to the financial situation of the country and the area. So there's a lot of moving factors. And we're also thinking, well, actually, if we let it sell out and we've got that demand, we understand where we are on the budget and things like that. So it's a difficult process to manage, but the earlier we can get it done, the more flexibility we have. And I think this year, hopefully, we've got a little bit more of that.
So presumably in your time at the club, you've been building up that intelligence about what things go out and when, and the sort of the flow out of the shop and all the rest of it, and that informs the next year's purchases, that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a sort of minimum purchase number from Macron, which sort of weighs back up with what we do in gift of kit. So it's kind of a sort of contra deal, if you like, in a complete
yeah. sense.
But yeah, we have all the data. We have the spikes in sales. We understand what a first week of sales looks like. We try and build that model from a financial perspective and from a logistical perspective. You know, and sometimes if I think we've done a good job in terms of design, then I'm already preempting that, okay, this might, if this goes down as well as we think it will, which obviously we always hope it's good, but if it goes down as well as we think it will, we're going to need an order in early.
Yeah.
We can preempt and we can have that order ready. Save ourselves the time on looking at sizes and which kit and that kind of thing.
And so from the club's perspective, do we make money on each item sold above its cost to us from the manufacturer? Or do they pay us kind of like a blanket license fee?
No, so we buy it from them at wholesale. So the gift right. is separate, and then we buy the items that we have in at the wholesale price. Obviously, as every business does, we then put a margin on that as much as possible, trying to keep that down from the levels that we're seeing elsewhere, as you sort of said.
£125 for an England shirt.
Yeah, you know, no comment on the supplier or the team that out there. But personally, for me, as like I said, as a football fan, I think that's getting beyond the realms of, you know, yeah. certainly what I could afford. And
yeah.
I think we try and be as reasonable as we can, whilst also, you know, running a retail operation just like
yeah.
the high street retailer would.
So from a fan's perspective, any fan that goes into the shop and buys something is putting money into the club, not Macron per se, because you've paid Macron. Yeah, we that's our stock. We've committed that capital. So anybody that's going in and buying something is effectively putting money into the club, because I think that, yeah, that's an important distinction to make in terms of are we feathering the nest of somebody in Bologna who buys another Ferrari off the back of me buying a fleecy top or an away shirt kind of thing. So I think that's always interesting to know. What are the sorts of things that can go wrong in that supply chain though? I mean, were we affected by the Suez Canal blockage or anything like that?
We've had, and obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of exactly, but last year, for example, we had an issue in, obviously, the factories that produced the kit initially are based in China. We had an issue where the boat, I'll be really transparent here, the boat left China. It then got stopped. And this is not to do with our kit. Obviously, this container ship is taking
yeah.
thousands and thousands of goods all around the world. It then got stopped, sent back to change what it had picked up from someone else. And obviously our kit at the time is just stuck on that boat whilst we're waiting. So, you know, that's not in Macron's hands as much as
yeah.
we push. You know, there's nothing that the Chinese authorities are going to do that is going to help Blackburn Rovers, unfortunately, in that scenario. So that happened last year. That then delays us, I think, roughly 3 weeks. So we make conscious decisions to try and sort of mitigate against those. Obviously doing it earlier is better. But last year, as you'll know, we had 1,000 of each shirt flown in at a cost to the club, you know, so that comes off the top line of the cost of those shirts. But we had them flown in, so they were available to fans, and we did all we could with that. But, you know, we've had pirate attacks on ships that have slowed down. We've had, obviously, yeah,
those Burnley fans will go to all sorts of ends to stop us getting our kids.
yeah, exactly that. You know, we've had the Suez Canal, as you mentioned. It is a classic. You know, it will reach the shores, whether it be in Italy, obviously for quality control, or whether it reaches here. You know, and the paperwork that we have to go through to get it through, especially at the volumes we're doing. Yeah, and there's nothing that unfortunately I can do about that other than put pressure on those that are at the end of the process. Yeah. So Like I said, the earlier we do it, the more we mitigate against these. But I can't go and physically drive a ship from China all the way here, unfortunately.
That really would be an interesting job, I think, in many respects. So in your time at the club, what's been the most popular shirt? What's the one that's absolutely flown off the shelves?
The one that, obviously, the two seasons that I've been here, the six sort of kits that we've done, the third shirt from my first season, which was the sort of red with the Lancashire Rose depicted in it and embossed.
Yeah.
That was really, really popular. We were a little bit unsure of what the reaction to that would be because it was very different, very bold, but it went down phenomenally well. And it sort of led into the conversation around the third shirt that we currently have, which is obviously similar to your sort of jacket there.
This was inspired by it, obviously.
Neon yellow, which again was... It's a risk for us. I think third kit should always be different, right?
They can be more playful, to use Nike's word, can't they?
Yeah. In the right ways, obviously.
Yes.
The home and the away, they kind of have connotations, you know, around colours and designs that are, you know, historic. Obviously, we're never going to mess with the blue and white. I'll put that on record now. unlike a couple of suppliers who I think we've had in the past who didn't want to do that.
We've got this claret design for you.
I don't think I'd stay in a job too long with that kind of...
No, you wouldn't. I don't think you'd stay in the town for very long.
Yeah, very true. But the third kit this year, obviously very bold, very different. We obviously tried to have the sort of steel works from around the stadium depicted in that light blue pattern. But obviously the very futuristic look of the neon, we tied that into a virtual reality launch, which was the first of its kind from a football club, which again was part of activation in the store. And that as a culmination and an activation for a launch made that really popular. I actually thought that, you know, we sort of pitched it. We have a target audience for all these shirts, but we pitched it at a younger audience because of the vibrancy, but we had a really strong uptake from an adult age range. So, you know, maybe that data tells me something different and feeds into future designs. But the third kits have gone down well, and I like seeing that sort of different side of things go down well because it means we can do more of it.
Yeah, in the warm weather as well, you'd be able to see just how popular they are in the crowd, weren't they? Like, looking around, either that, we've got thousands more stewards sat in the Jack Walker stand, one or the other. So the key question, I guess, we ask is, when will next season's kits be on sale in the shop? Will we be able to buy those for our summer holidays?
So all being well, obviously, we're, like I said, timeline-wise, I'm hoping that by early June, we've got everything in. At that point, unfortunately, I can't shoot any photo shoots because the players are still having their time off. So I'm hoping by the end of June to have all of that kind of stuff wrapped. And then we'll be looking at July launches. Obviously, quantities, touch woods, and no sort of pirates getting involved with any of the shipping. We should be able to get everything in for that point. So rather than the sort of drip feeding in that early sort of first weeks, we'll have a bulk of kit, which means that most people should get what they want in the size they want when they want it, hopefully for that sort of July, August period when people are heading off around the world and representing Rovers globally, ready to then come back in early August for the first few games of the season.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to that. I don't expect you to reveal anything about the kits or the colours, but if you want to, that would be absolutely terrific. Yeah, we could have the exclusive preview.
The home one's blue and white.
Good.
but no, I think, you know, obviously we're going into a 30th anniversary of a historic season and a Premier League win for the club, which I think would be wrong to ignore. So there's nods to that, which I think the fans, you know, have fed in with consultation. I think, again, that's another point to note is that, you know, we've done surveys and fan consultations. I know you're a big fan of looking at colours on Twitter, so hopefully that's gone down in the right direction. But all of those things are really important to me. Like, these kits aren't, as much as I want to be proud of what we do, I want the fans to be proud of what we do because, you know, you guys are buying them, wearing them with pride. It's your club. I'm a custodian of what we're doing. So, you know, getting the fans involved in survey format and in sort of consultation groups from every sort of pocket of fans that we have is really, really important to me because it's for you guys. And obviously, I'll try and steer, and I've got my own thoughts and feelings about where kit culture is going and how do we create a product that's different and new. But also, you know, it doesn't really matter what I think sometimes. It's about, you know, doing what's right by the fans. So hopefully you'll see that in the kits that come out this summer.
Good stuff. I'll look forward to seeing those. We're remiss of me to let you go without asking you then, what is your favourite kit? What's the shirt that you really love and admire?
It's a tough one. I've got a couple. I think the first one for me would be the first shirt I had, which was, unfortunately, as you might tell by the accent, I'm a Tottenham fan, so definitely not a Glory supporter on that front. But I had the 2004 kit with sort of Thompson on the front. It was like I had the away kit, which was navy, and it had a sort of very stretchy neoprene type feel to it. My favourite players at the time, sort of like Ledley King, Michael Carrick. It was just before he went to Man United. And that for me stands out as a kit. And I actually bought the same kit in an adult size last season, just as a sort of, I think I had Pedro Mendes number 8 on the back on this one that I've just bought. but that sticks out. I think your first kit is always
oh, absolutely
very memorable. Yeah. The other kit that I like that's away from any clubs that I've worked for or supported is the Borussia Dortmund kit from the year I was born. So it's sort of like a neon. I think they've recreated it in time.
Is that the high-vis one when they won the Champions League?
Yeah, so it's neon and black. Very sort of super simple sponsor. You know, a little bit... it's got that retro feel to it, which obviously kit culture and football fashion is really in right now. So I love that kit. And obviously... I like the kits that are synonymous with years that are important to me as well. You know, my dad has his favourite kits and I take them on as my favourite kits because that's what he likes and things like that. So they're the two in my mind that are really strong. But hopefully there's a few Rovers shirts in the future that end up being favourites as well.
Well, that would be good. I say there have been some interesting ones. I mean, I call it the Grasshoppers Zurich kit. For me, that wasn't a Rovers shirt, but I could see how and why it was incredibly popular. And it was something that was fundamentally different. As I say, for me, I remember having the Grasshoppers Zurich sort of Sabutio team and somebody sort of saying, oh, is that Blackburn Rovers? No, it's not, because the halves aren't reversed on the back. You know, this, like the other. Even then, I was manic about these sorts of details. But Sampdoria, as I alluded to earlier, I think is my... I think it's the Football Italia generation, sort of when Football Italia was on Channel 4 and we got the chance to see live Italian football for the first time, and I saw the Sampdoria kits and Ruud Gullit, Des Walker and Trevor Francis playing for them, and I thought, my word, that's magnificent. And I bought a cotton retro a few years ago from I think it's a Dutch supplier, Copa Football, and it came in this wonderful presentation box. I it's one of those, I don't wear it in case I wash it, and it all sort of goes baggy or something like that. I have worn it, if you wanted that, but I think that's one of my favourites. And I always remember, again, as a kid, the Ajax shirt being sort of absolutely iconic when they got to the Champions League finals, of course. It was just absolutely fantastic.
I think some of the Italian stuff as well, that, you know, Venezia are a great example. I think.
Oh, they've done some great work with Kappa, haven't they?
Italy are really bringing back, as a league and the clubs within Italy, I think they're really bringing back the retro feel. They're getting the fashion part of kits. You know, it's not just for the players on the pitch, it's for the fan in the stand.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily then to have Macron in Italy at the heart of that, you know, and the stuff they do with Bologna is fantastic. So that really helps in terms of the design elements and what they pitch us first. So, excited to see the sort of the continuation of that kit culture.
Well, certainly some of our best kits were back in the day with the Kappa ones, that Italian influence, although the fit was interesting, shall we say, for certain supporters having to buy even large ones than normal. Fraser, that's been fantastic. That's been really insightful and informative, and hopefully it will give our listeners a greater understanding and appreciation of just what's involved in the process, and hopefully also will whet their appetite as to what might be hitting the club shops in the summer, ready for the summer holidays. Thanks once again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The 4,000 Holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. It's from a Beatles song. Give it a listen.
Blackburn Rovers is a club with a great past. The present side shows that it has a great future.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.